MacCast, Wednesday, February 16th, 2005.
All systems are functional.
1.21 gigawatts!
Malfunction!
Do you know anything about computers?
It's alive!
This is your MacCast, the show for Mac geeks by a Mac geek, with your host Adam, here to discuss all things Macintosh.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Let's get right into it. So if you live in New York and you happen to own an iPod, while riding the subway, you might want to reconsider using those white iPod earbuds. Turns out that according to the Transit Authority in New York, iPod users or listeners are being targeted for robberies because of their iPod headphones. Thieves are noticing that you have those nice shiny white earbuds and then logically assume that you have an iPod and are mugging you. As a matter of fact, those types of muggings are double in recent months. So just beware, if you have an iPod in New York, you may want to consider getting a set of cheaper headphones so you don't stand out so much and you aren't kind of targeted by these criminals. And that probably goes for just about anybody. I mean, you know, it's very obvious when you have those white earbuds that you have an iPod. So I want you guys to be safe and, you know, just be alert, be aware of what's going on around you. So Apple must listen to, or somebody at Apple must be listening to the MacCast, because Apple just posted on their page a area for people to go and give their experiences in switching from the PC to the Macintosh. So I think maybe they subscribed to the feed and picked up the latest Switcher story special I put out, because they're revisiting the Switcher campaign, I believe. So if you are a PC user, there's a link from the show notes. Go over to maccast.com and you can find the page over on Apple where there's a little forum and they want to know questions about your experience, what it was like. They want your stories and how you felt about the whole conversion process. So head over there. You know, who knows? Maybe one of my listeners will end up in a Mac commercial. We'll just have to wait and see. Speaking of commercials, I asked last show if you could send in some ads for the MacCast, and I actually received one from Andy, and I really appreciate it. It's really awesome, and I want to let you guys listen to it so you can hear it. I've sent it out on the wire to Don and Drew and Adam Curry, and also put it on openpodcast.org. So hopefully you'll be hearing it around all over the place, and we'll get a little more visitors to the MacCast. So here's the first MacCast promo.
There are thousands of websites that you could visit to get up to date with Mac-related news. Apple Insider, Think Secret, Apple Hot News, but I just think that it's easier to download the MacCast, because the MacCast, you just download onto your iPod, listen to it, and it gives you all the news that you could possibly need. You can listen to this at work, at school, on your commute. It's just simpler that way. It's the Mac way of doing things. www.maccast.com.
All right, what do you think? Guys, I think it's really awesome, and I really appreciate Andy going through the effort to put that together for me. I'm going to send it out there, and if anyone else wants to take a crack at doing an ad for the MacCast, a little promo ad, you know, 10, 15, or 15 to 30 seconds would be great. Maybe we'll get your ad out there and played, and I really appreciate it. All right, so what else is happening? Apple stock is going up and up, has been for a while, and the latest thing is that Merrill Lynch is saying that Apple are raising their kind of target price on Apple over the next 12 months because what they're saying is a rumored Apple-Sony partnership. As you guys may remember, the president of Sony, and I'm going to totally mutilate his name, Kunitaki Ando, I believe is his name, came out at Macworld on stage and showed off a new digital camera, and that started these rumors that maybe there was something going on with Apple and Sony. Well, Merrill Lynch seems to agree, and the speculation is about three possible products. One is a movie store, sort of like iTunes, but for digital movies, for downloadable movies. The other thing that they're rumoring about is a high-performance workstation for doing digital video, which would use the new Cell processor. And I don't know much about this, but I have a link in the show notes to, I believe, an Ars Technica article. Let me just check that for you. Yeah, it's a technical on article on Ars Technica that describes all about the cell processor. But the cell processor is a joint venture between IBM, Sony, and Toshiba. And I guess it's designed for high-end, real high-end work. So there's a rumor that maybe Apple and Sony are working on a workstation for that. And the last thing that they are talking about as a potential partnership between Apple and Sony would be a network-centric television for handling what they're calling next-generation entertainment feeds. So I'm not really sure what that's all about. But because Merrill Lynch seems to think Apple and Sony might be partnering up, they're raising the target price of the stock. So if you have Apple stock, you know, great. I know the stock split's happening, so I'm not sure how that factors into it. I believe the price Merrill Lynch set for a 12-month period is 102, and I believe the current price is somewhere around 80, 81. I didn't check it today, but yesterday I think it was $81 a share, somewhere around $81 a share. Last MacCast I reported about the Motorola E1060 cell phone, which a number of websites was saying was the iTunes cell phone. Motorola came out today and said that that was not the iTunes cell phone. It was simply a product they were using to demonstrate the iTunes client, but it is not their quote-unquote iTunes product. So sorry for incorrectly reporting that, but I did that along with a number of other sites and wanted to make that correction right now. All right, what else is happening? I want to tell you guys about a cool concept product. There's a guy named Wordman who runs a blog called Asteroid, and he posted a picture, and I've also posted it on maccast.com, of his concept for a Mac Mini AV dock, basically a docking station for putting a Mac Mini into your home entertainment center. And it's really coolly designed. There's full specs on his blog website, and there's a link from the show notes if you guys want to check it out. But at the very least, go over to maccast.com and check out the picture. It's very, very, very cool. Another great picture to take a look at that's also on maccast.com is Apple unveiled today the retail packaging for OS X Tiger. And it's basically a black box, dark black box, and on the front cover is a large platinum X. And the X is so big that it actually extends off the top and bottom of the package. Has a really cool drop shadow, so it's got really cool 3D effect. Really neat. No actual tiger stripes or anything like that, like you might have thought. Just very cool, simple design. Like the box a lot. Take a look at it and let me know your impressions, what you think about it. You can email maccast@gmail.com or call the hotline 206-222-2788-20-MACCAST8 to leave your feedback. Oh, and Tiger should be due out the first half of 2005, whatever that means, which in most cases, in terms of Apple, means it'll be out at the very end of the first half of 2005. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it, probably like everyone else. So now let's talk a little bit about the Mac Mini, or not the Mac Mini, I'm sorry, messed that up. Let's talk a little bit about iPod Minis. So many different Minis now these days. But the iPod Mini, it looks like, is got some more buzz to it. I think we talked about this before Macworld, that possibly there would be new iPod Minis with the 5 gigabyte drives in them, basically increasing the storage capacity 25%. The 5 gig drives have been available in other MP3 hard disk MP3 players for a while now, and I think Apple's Minis are due for a bump along with many other people. But what's supporting this latest rumor is the fact that I guess on international online Apple stores, they changed the ship dates, the shipping times on the iPod Minis from next day, basically shipping the next day, to 8 days. And I guess this is exactly what happened in the US with the PowerBooks. Right before Apple announced the new revs of the PowerBook, Apple increased the ship time from next day on the PowerBook to 8 days. So a lot of people are now believing that that means iPod Minis, new iPod Minis, might be due to be announced next week. My question to you is sort of, or something I was thinking about, in terms of the storage capacity going from 4 gigabytes to 5 gigabytes, how big of a difference does that make in your buying decision to buy an iPod Mini if you're in the market for that? Is that a huge decision, that for that extra gigabyte, or does it not really matter? Does anybody really care? Give me your feedback on that. All right, I want to hear from you. To me, it just seems like it's a bump they need to do in order to compete with the other players. It's just like a maintenance bump, and nothing really more than that. It, you know, it's not adding any new features to the Mini. It's not making it that much better. I guess it's better in terms you can store more music on it. But really, in terms of a music collection, how much does that extra 1 gigabyte really mean? So last show, I mentioned that Apple had been given a subpoena against PowerPage and Apple Insider to force them to reveal the sources of the information that was leaked before the last Mac World. Sounds like that Apple now is going to go ahead and not use those subpoenas against those two organizations until they hear from the Superior Court of Santa Clara on a motion that the EFF, who is the Electronic Frontier Foundation, basically their lawyers are representing the defendants in this case, and they filed a motion to have a protective order on their clients so that they're not forced to reveal those sources. So Apple's going to kind of play a little bit of the nice guy here and hold on to those subpoenas, not use them, and wait for the judge's decision in that case. And if the judge rules that they can have the protective order, that the EFF and these two websites can have the protective order, then they're not going to have to reveal the identity of their sources. So I think that's a good thing. I'm glad Apple's doing that. I wish they would just go ahead and drop the entire lawsuit. I think it's completely ridiculous. I think it violates First Amendment rights in terms of reporting. If they're able to get information, this is a problem internally inside Apple. If their employees can't keep their mouths shut, then that's Apple's problem to deal with, and they need to deal with it more strongly from an internal perspective. But that's really my opinion. And I know it's hard to keep, you know, employees under control like that, but it's what Apple needs to do. Just my opinion. Weigh in on that if you disagree with me, or if you agree with me, let me know about it. Send me an MP3 audio comment. I'll be happy to share your views. I've always said, and I want to remind people of this, that this show, the MacCast, is your show. I'm just doing it. I'm the one who's kind of set it up, but I did it because I wanted a forum where we could all come together as Mac users, part of the Macintosh community, and have a dialogue with each other. And there just was no other show out there that I saw that was facilitating that. So hopefully that's what this show is about. And please weigh in on any issue that I discuss. I promise to give equal time to anybody who wants to have a voice. And hopefully I've proven that so far, and I will continue to do so. I promise you guys of that. All right. Right before I sat down to record the show tonight, I got an email from listener Paul, and he has been sending me all kinds of stuff about this Napster thing. I don't know if you guys are aware, but Napster released their new to-go service and basically targeted Apple's iTunes music store with their ads. And Napster's service is a little bit different. Rather than purchasing albums or tracks and downloading them, what you do is you pay $15 a month and you subscribe to their service. And the way their service works is you can download as many tracks as you want, and they're in Windows Media format, protected in Windows Media format. You can download as many as you want, load them onto an MP3 device, and listen to them. So you can download as much music as you want as long as you continue to pay $15 a month. The minute you stop paying, then your music goes away. And the WMA format that's protected, you're not able to burn to CD. Well, the latest news is that there is a plugin for Winamp, which is an MP3 player on the PC. And this plugin allows you to basically record the stream coming out of your sound card. So before it goes out to your speakers or some external source, you can actually intercept the stream and record it to a WAV file. And then that WAV file is capable of being able to be burned onto an audio CD. So what they're saying is Napster's offering a 14-day or 15-day free trial, I believe. And so what they're saying people are doing is they're signing up for the free trial, they're pulling down all the music that they want, and then they're using this little trick to actually record it onto CDs and then canceling the service. So they're getting all the music they want, and they're saying, we're going back to the days of Napster where it's like pirate and everybody's, you know, taking tunes and stuff like that. So Paul, right before the show, sent me a link to an excerpt of an article from the LA Times about an email that apparently Steve Jobs sent off to the record industry label, the record executives. And basically, Steve was saying, hey, you guys need to get reins on Napster. Look, they're ripping you off. You know, all your music's being stolen. The funny thing about this, and what I want to comment on, is that this issue, it's being played up in the press as a security hole in Napster. Well, this is a security hole in any audio service or even in streaming web services. So there's lots of services that don't even allow you to download, but just allow you to stream from the web. And there's applications and programs on the Mac and the PC that allow you to intercept an audio stream coming from your computer and record it. It's just facts of life. It's like sticking a tape recorder on the, you know, line out jack on your computer and recording it. Similar sort of thing. So there's nothing really anybody can do to stop this. The problem isn't limited to Napster, and Steve sending off this email is a little bit, you know, ridiculous in my opinion. And actually, Napster called them on it. Napster responded with basically just what I told you, the argument I told you. On the Mac, you can use a program like Audio Hijacks Pro from Rogue Amoeba, which does exactly the same thing that this Winamp plugin does on the PC side. My point here is that Steve needs to be a little careful. You know, the saying, I believe, is people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, because the reality is there's also a piece of software out there called HIM, and it's available at himproject.org, that will actually allow you to strip off the digital rights management from the music that you purchase from the iTunes music store. So the iTunes files have actually been... Their digital rights management has actually been compromised to the point where you can actually strip it off the files. So, you know, Steve should be careful about, you know, who he's contacting and what he's saying. And, you know, he's going to get caught on this one. I have this feeling. Just watch the news media over the next couple of days. And this one might kind of really come back to bite him. So now let's talk a little bit about the eMac and sort of its place in the future of Apple now that we have the Mac Mini. I have a listener, Richard, who sent me an email, and he has a friend who's a PC user who is switching over to the Macintosh and is considering debating whether to get the Mac Mini or to go with an eMac. And his thing is, when you actually spec the two machines out, and on the Mac Mini you have to factor in a keyboard, a monitor, and a mouse, they end up coming very close to the same price. And if you look at the specifications in terms of processor, hard drive, CD, and all that, CD-ROM or DVD burner, all those sorts of things, they actually end up having very similar or almost the same specifications. So he's not really sure what to do. The one thing in his case is that his friend really wants a flat panel screen, a TFT flat panel screen, but he's going to get a really cheapo one to get his price down, because he wants the cheap price, but a lot of style and, you know, the flat panel monitor. And the problem with, and we discussed this a little bit in the email, that the problem with cheap flat panels is that they're really, really cheap monitors. And the 17-inch CRT regular monitor that's built into the eMac is really a beautiful screen. And it's not like on the iMac G5s, where the flat panel is the high-quality Macintosh flat panel. If you buy a really cheapo flat panel, you know, it doesn't have the cool design, it's not very attractive, and you're going to end up with not a very high-quality monitor. So his thing is, what do you do? Do you get the eMac and get the beautiful screen, the all-in-one design? It doesn't have all the cable clutter. You just have, you know, basically the power cable coming into it and your network cable, and that's it. And then the, you know, keyboard cable comes out the front, but very, very clean in terms of how it looks sitting on a desk. And if anyone has seen the Mac Mini, it's a really great device, but it has the power brick hanging off of it. And then you're going to have all your cables coming out of the back. So you have a lot of cables to deal with. And, you know, making those neat and tidy can be a little more difficult. I guess this is a concern for Richard's friend, that it looked nice sitting on the desk. So he's going back and forth, and I'm not really sure what the good call is. I will tell you, I've had many PC users that I've recommended the eMac to, and this was before the Mac Mini came along, so I don't know what I would do today. And maybe you can chime in with some of your advice. But I've had many PC users switch over to an eMac, and they absolutely love it. I think it's a beautiful machine. I really like them a lot. I'm not sure what's going to happen with the eMac now that we have the Mac Mini. Is the Mac Mini going to replace it? We'll just have to wait and see. Probably so. My guess is that the Mac Mini will actually replace it, and Apple will probably come out with some Mac Minis that are bundled with different displays and keyboards and mice, bringing them up sort of close to the price of the current eMacs, maybe even a little cheaper. We'll just have to wait and see. But let me know what you think. Send me an email or an MP3 audio comment, and I'd love to hear from you. Okay, lo and behold, a little earlier we were talking about you providing feedback, either positive or negative. You agree with me or you don't agree with me. And on the last show, we talked about the store closings, the independent resale store closings that were happening up in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is the area up in and around San Francisco, California, for those of you who may not be familiar, but specifically McAdam was one of the stores that we mentioned. And I had said that, you know, Apple really needs to look out for their mom and pop resellers who have supported them for years and years and years. And I was going on and on about how great these independent resellers are. And I really truly believe that most are. The one locally here in San Diego that I go to is absolutely fabulous, fabulous store. Crywolf is the name of the company here in San Diego, and they're an independent Apple reseller, and they're absolutely wonderful. I can't say more than enough great things about them. I know the owners and the people over there, and they work very, very hard and do a lot to support Apple products. But so I was going on assuming that McAdam, the store in the Bay Area, was exactly the same, and that was what was being reported in the news media, that they were basically a victim in this thing. Well, a couple of comments popped up on MacCast.com. Go over there, look at the comments for the last show, and you can see what they're saying. But basically, people are telling me, or two people commented on there, that, you know, McAdam really wasn't that great, and they weren't doing that great of a job. So some of the problems with Apple retail stores coming in, which the Apple retail stores do an absolutely fabulous job selling and promoting Apple products. I mean, it's obvious they're owned by Apple. But I guess they picked up some of the slack where McAdam, you know, had kind of left customers out there. And it didn't just have to do with availability of products like McAdam was alleging and like these articles were alleging. So I guess I may have been wrong on that, or at the very least, there's another side of the story. So I'm glad that the listeners are out there and responding back on that and keeping us all in check. And we make sure that we get our facts straight, because the news media, the professional news media, does not always report the full story. And that's why we have podcasting, and that's what makes this show so great, is that you can chime in and give your opinion and give your side of the story and your experience. All right. So last thing that I'm going to leave you with is a little bit of feedback from the last show. I asked about MP3s and cell phones, and, you know, do people really want to listen to MP3s on their cell phones, or would they rather have a dedicated device like an iPod or a flash-based MP3 player? And I got feedback from Randy, and here's his thoughts on that.
Howdy, my name is Randy Peterman, and you asked for comments on how I felt about, or how we as listeners felt about, cell phones that are also MP3 players and PDAs and, I don't know, everything else that they seem to cram into cell phones. I'm actually calling you right now on a Nokia 3300 that I got just about a year ago today. And I love it. It plays MP3s, which is nice. However, I'm limited to not being able to use iTunes. I have to use the Nokia software, which frankly sucks. But I like the fact that it's got an external memory card. If I can go out and find a 2 gigabyte memory card, I should be able to put 2 gigabytes worth of songs on it, which is nice. However, I just got my wife an iPod Shuffle for Valentine's Day, and, well, frankly, it makes me just a hair bit envious, but it's pretty nifty. And, I think there's a real advantage to not carrying around 3 devices, but the Shuffle is so small that, yeah, I could probably carry around one of those without having to worry about it. All right, thanks for the show, and keep it up.
So, thanks, Randy. I don't know, a little mixed bag on that review, though. I wasn't really sure if Randy was all for the MP3 cell phone. It sounds like he likes his, but also a little envious of his wife's iPod Shuffle. And his comment about the software kind of sucking with the Nokia kind of further emphasizes my point that, you know, I think when you try and converge one device and try and make it into something more than it is, so it's a cell phone, and when you try and make it into more of a phone, you end up with a little mediocre MP3 player and a mediocre cell phone, and, you know, it's not quite one or the other, it's half of both. So, you know, that's just my feelings on it. It sounds like Randy likes his phone, but I think the iPod Shuffle, you know, which is dedicated to playing music and playing MP3s, is a little more elegant solution than some cell phone with MP3 player kludged onto it. Okay, well, that's the show for tonight. Looks like we're at about 25 minutes. Wow, I'm getting more and more these days over my limit, so please send me your comments on that. Let me know if that's really bothering you, and I'll try and tone it down. Just recently, there seems like there's been lots of stuff to cover, and I want to make sure you guys get all the news that you should be getting. But tonight, I'm going to leave you with some new music. Oh, before I do that, remember, go to MacCast.com if you want to get the full show notes and links to everything that I talked about. Please give me your feedback, MacCast@gmail.com, and call the audio hotline, 206-222-2788. All right, I'm going to leave you with new music tonight from a band called Chop Tank Murphy. It was sent by MacCast listener Dan. He said the band gave permission for me to play it, so hopefully that's true. I'm going to take him on his word. You can visit the band at their website, choptankmurphy.com. As always, if you like what you hear, please shoot them an email or send the band some feedback directly. Let them know you heard it on the MacCast so they know they're getting their money's worth by allowing me to play the track on here. This track is called Gray Angel, and it's by Chop Tank Murphy. Enjoy, and I will see you all next time.
Make free this gray angel rise. again, it seems. Oh, oh, oh. And I'm falling, I'm falling, I'm falling away. Yeah. I can try again, I can hold on again, and again, and again. Oh, I can try again, and I can hold on again, and again, and again. You know, might hear me, 'cause you've changed everything. Seems.